Welcome back to the Junkyard Dogcast, everybody. I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7. With me, Kip Adams, Rusty Mansell, also of Dogs 24/7. And Georgia is 2-0, 63-17 over Murray State, what we all expected. Don't know if we expected the exact way it panned out. We're going to talk about that. We're going to give full recap of the game. We're going to get into a guy who played really well in the game, who we've talked about on the podcast before. And we're going to jump right into it, and we're going to go ahead and jump into this thing. All right, so Georgia starts off quick, scores on the first drive, 7-7, though, at the end of the first quarter. Explodes for 35 points in the second quarter, and it was kind of all smooth sailing from there. Rusty, what were kind of your thoughts on the game, overall impressions?
You know, I went back and watched it twice today just to go back and look. I sped through it and watched it a couple times a day to see if anything else stood out. I think, to me, look, I know Kirby Smart and those guys they can dwell on it much as they want, but it's hard to coming that season opener on the road at Nashville, at Vandy, the team was pumped, and you come home and you play Murray State. It's just hard to probably have that juice, the same juice they had there, fought through the little first quarter bumps there. But two things stood out to me. I'm going to give you a positive, and, of course, we're going to talk about the other guy later. But I'm going to give you a positive. I thought Tyler Clark was damn good. I mean, I went back and watched. He was beating double teams. That looked like Tyler Clark of 2 years ago for me, and that's a great thing for Georgia to have that player in the inside who is that disruptive, you know, beating double teams. Listen, it was Murray State, but those are still college football players. And, seeing Tyler Clark do what he did yesterday is very good news for Georgia. There's one thing that I did notice the second time I watched. Georgia seemed to be missing the first tackle yesterday. And I know Tay Crowder is a guy that we talk about a lot, and he's impressive to all of us. But after the first 2 weeks, he's going to have to be a little bit more sure tackler to me. I mean, he's on the spot, and a lot of times the guy gets loose. I mean, yesterday on the big Mark Webb hit, Tay played it great on the play, and he was there all over the guy and just couldn't lock him up. And he missed another tackle, missed two tackles. Went back and watched a little bit of the Vandy game of the day, missed a couple of tackles. So I'm being real picky here, but in bigger games, you got to make that tackle against Notre Dame because some of those bigger, better athletes missed tackles 15, 20, 25 more yards. But team speed for Georgia, man, they flash so fast into the screen when you watch them on TV. So that's three kind of quick hitters from me from yesterday.
Yeah, and on the Tay Crowder thing, I mean, like you said, great play. He kind of got there. Somebody on the board, on the Junkyard was talking about he over-pursued. Didn't over-pursue. He played it inside out. Perfect. Just kind of got grabbed in there. Guy tried to duck under the tackle. And what you're going to run into against Notre Dame in situations like that, if Georgia's missing tackles, is Notre Dame's going to block you up a little bit better, and you're not going to have four guys right behind you to get there all the time. And sometimes you've got to make sure that you're the guy that gets him on the ground. That one actually turned out pretty well for Georgia, because if Crowder gets him on the ground, he doesn't fumble. Georgia doesn't get a defensive score. But got to finish those plays. I saw the same thing, Rusty, from Monty Rice on a couple plays. Eric Stokes had one. I think Eric Stokes probably got a little bit of flack in the film room today or will tomorrow for getting trucked by the quarterback right before halftime. But those are a couple, two or three things that I noticed as well. And I'll get to my impressions after you, Kip. What did you see and what did you think about the game? Was there anything that kind of jumped out at you?
I like Rusty's format, you know, one good thing, one bad thing. I think, you know, looking on the positive side, a couple numbers kind of stood out to me. I know against Vanderbilt, them going, I think, 1-for-8 on third down, you know, that was, I wouldn't say alarming, but it was definitely something you don't want to see, you know, if you're on Georgia's coaching staff, to see them be able to go, you know, 8-for-10 on third down against Murray State. That's got to be a little encouraging to the offensive coaches and just the players in general to know that, you know, more of that mental focus on offense. They knew what they wanted to accomplish, and for the most part, they were able to do that. And then the other thing for me, I think they had like 10 penalties against Vanderbilt, and that's definitely something you want to cut down on. You know, those garbage yards, those yards add up over the course of the game and can really mean the difference in the game. The hidden yardage, I should say, not garbage, but just like special teams. I mean, penalties, that's a big facet of the game. And they were able to cut that number in half as well. You know, I think it was four penalties for 30 yards maybe in the game. And so just getting them just more focused and more efficient was a big part of just, you know, the overall positive I took from that moving forward, knowing that they're going to have some pretty strong opponents over the next couple of weeks. But really the one thing that kind of caught my eye, it's kind of carried over from week one to week two, is the offensive line. You know, they've been heralded as one of the best in the country. They continue to get it done in the ground game. And you know, Jake Fromm is still performing at a high level, throwing the ball as well. But the pass protection, I you know, there's a couple snaps out there where they're still getting – they're getting beat on these twists. You know, they get the defensive line is kind of you know, giving them a little bit of issues early on in the game. I think it's still something that, you know, when they go into the film room and they're looking at that, and they're, you know, between Solomon Kinley or, you know, Trey Hill, young center, but at the same time, the competition they've had in camp and this offensive line that they've been able to put together is supposed to be able to play at a very high level. And I think that Kirby Smart expects them to be able to do a little bit better than they've done in pass pro so far these first 2 weeks, because they're going to have, again, much stronger defensive line, especially when you get toward that November schedule. You know, a team like Auburn, seeing what they've been able to do on their defensive line, you want to have that cleaned up and have that figured out, because they're definitely going to bring it in that game. And, you know, obviously several other teams have strong defensive line. Florida has a strong defensive line as well. So it's just something that kind of stood out to me in this game. But again, overall, pretty positive outcome. And the main thing is you want to come out of this with no further injuries. And it seems like they're still in pretty good shape in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. That's probably the number one big takeaway from this game, is coming out of it without any injuries. You know, I look at the game, I'm going to start with the negative, and that's the fact that when you play a Murray State or even an Arkansas State or a team like that, listen, when you go play anybody else in the SEC or another Power 5 school, you know you're going to give up 20-plus yard plays, one or two at least. I think you come into a game like this one and you feel like it's one where you can really limit those, where you can legitimately put your number as far as explosive plays at zero and have a chance to meet it. And Georgia gave up a couple of big ones. I mean, they gave up one of 60 yards to on the pass to Daquan Green, a former Florida guy, and then had another, that 35-yard run before halftime by the quarterback. And, you know, the big plays, I think, and I think some of it had to do with Georgia being a little bit more aggressive. You know, they were busts. I mean, the one where the 60-yard touchdown pass, I mean, Richard LeCount flew up to play the run right away, left Mark Webb out to drive, because Webb, if he didn't break up that pass, it's a touchdown, because there was nothing back deep. And that was just kind of a double whammy there. And then the quarterback scramble, I mean, those are going to happen, but you got to get that guy on the ground a lot sooner than that. And so I think, you know, I'm kind of in putting myself in Rusty's mode here with this, is the fact that if I'm nitpicking the two big plays against an FCS opponent, you really don't feel great about that. But one thing I did really like is if you take that 35-yard run out by the quarterback, Georgia gave up negative yards rushing. And you know, that's with the sacks as well. I think the sack adjusted rushing yardage in this game was somewhere around 76 yards, if I'm not mistaken, below 4 yards a carry. The net rushing yards in this game were 23. And Georgia really went out and succeeded in their ability to completely stop the run. Last year, I felt like when Samford wanted to stick it up in there and run it, Samford did. When Middle Tennessee State wanted to stick it up in there and run it, they did a little bit. But I felt like this defense was a little bit more up to the challenge. I know that's not what Murray State does well, but I really did feel like that was a really good showing there by the defense. And Georgia didn't play Samford last year. They played Austin Peay. But I did the same thing J.R. Reed did a couple weeks ago whenever he said that Samford was coming up after Vanderbilt. And both of us are 2 years off there. But ultimately, I felt like that they did a really good job stopping the run. They showed up there and didn't After Sudden Change is another one that I have to go with there with Eli Wolf when he fumbled. Georgia came out, got the stop, got right back into it, scored a touchdown on the ensuing drive, and started, you know, the process of putting the game away. So those are the things that kind of stood out to me. One thing I think I want to bring up here, and it's kind of unplanned, was, okay, so Jamari Sawyer gets the start at right tackle. Cade Mays gets the start at right guard. Different than what we thought it was going to be, but then after the first couple of series, you saw a ton of Cade Mays at right tackle and a ton of Ben Cleveland at right guard. And I know the first drive went really well for Georgia. I know that there was not any specific breakdown on Jamari Sawyer's part at right tackle or Cade Mays at right guard. But when I went back and looked at the game, Rusty, I felt like that Georgia's best combination, most fluid combination, was Ben Cleveland at right guard and Cade Mays at right tackle. What, did you notice anything about that? Do you have an impression on that?
You know, you don't get enough sample size, I guess, with Jamari there. But, you know, we talk to a lot of the same people. And every time we bring that up about Jamari on the board or, you know, different people, everybody's like, there's no way that guy's playing right tackle. Well, Georgia believes in him that much. But I do think right now, from experience-wise, a little bit more length with Cade Mays at tackle. And obviously, when you put Ben in at guard, you're just a different package because of the size. Look, Jamari Sawyer is a big dude. He is powerful, and he's going to be a very, very good football player. I think right now the experience would give Cade Mays a little bit better, I think, a better option at right tackle to slide Ben in, because those guys have played a lot of football. I just think that it wasn't enough sample size for me to say one way or the other. Didn't see anything that really was like, you know, you never know. Maybe they missed a call or something, or, you know, it was kind of strange because he was in for two series and then Ben came in and kind of, they kind of went with that lineup. So it was interesting he started. Did that surprise you, Jake? He started at right tackle. I was just assuming Cade Mays was going to be the right tackle.
Yeah, it really surprised me. And it surprised me whenever I just saw him working a right tackle in pregame warmup. And maybe I would have thought he had a better chance to start at that spot had he been healthy for the last few weeks. But, you know, the injury combined with Mays being the first guy up there at Vanderbilt, and that was part of the, you know, part of the whole injury picture there too. But that did kind of catch me off guard a little bit. It's not something that I expected, but I do think, man, and I'll probably go over this during Notre Dame week, but I'm going to go over it now too. I mean, listen, guys, Notre Dame is good on the edge. I mean, you can talk about, yes, you know, what they're lacking in the middle and what they're lacking at running back and some of the things that they're just not the same team as last year in some areas. But their defensive ends, Dalen Hayes, Julian Okwara, and another kid that his name always escapes me, but they've got some guys that can get after the quarterback. And you're going to want to be really good at both tackles because they don't have to line one of them up on one side or not. They can come at you from both edges. And I just feel like that's something that this staff is probably going to have to really heavily evaluate the next couple weeks and really get that in order but before they take on the Fighting Irish in Athens and probably what's going to be one of the most electric atmospheres we've seen in a while, definitely one of the latest kickoffs.
Jake, let me ask you a question, and I'm thinking about that night. We all saw the light up at Vanderbilt and the Georgia lights it up in the fourth quarter. Am I seeing this right that Georgia's going to have red lights in the stadium? Is that new?
Yeah, that's new. They do have some LED lighting and they're going to kind of tint it in the fourth quarter from what I understand. I'm interested to see what it looks like. I mean, it could be one of those things. And you know how technology is. It could be one of those things where it may be tough to recognize it from television. So if you're not there, you may not notice it.
Sure.
But you know, I think it's something to the effect of what they've done at Braves games in the past where they do the chop with the phone and then they're going to dim the lights a little bit. And the LED gives them the capability to dim them and rise them back up real fast as opposed to, you know, I don't know if you guys ever had to turn the lights on at the baseball field or whatever growing up, but flip them on about an hour and a half before the game. And then they might be bright enough to play under by the time you got there.
That's gonna be something to see. Now I was not aware that was going on until like 2 days ago, and they were like, it's gonna be the first red one ever, and I'm like, what do you mean red one? So that'll be interesting to see that one.
If you guys want a little bit of insight on kind of what goes on with our job, I show up at Sanford Stadium on Saturday about 3 hours and 45 minutes before kickoff, and you become pretty good friends with some of the photographers and everything that shoot for USA Today and stuff like that. And I had a buddy walk up and he goes, "Man, what are we gonna do for the Notre Dame game? I've never shot in LED lighting before," and I'm just sitting here thinking like, man, I'm just trying to get out of that press box before breakfast. You know, like I'm trying to get to brunch the next day. LED lighting. Like, I don't know, man. You're the expert. I don't know anything about cameras. I just put the thing on the running man and shoot.
That's what I'll be doing on the sidelines that night. But that's going to be very cool. That's going to be very, very cool. And if it wasn't security reason, I guarantee you we would hire a drone and put one over that stadium. That'd be a hell of a view from overhead.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, moving on here real quick. Let's talk about, let's look at maybe something we learned from Georgia on Saturday. I know that they played an FCS opponent, and sometimes it can be kind of tough to glean anything from that game. But, Kip, was there anything that you picked up from watching the game that you kind of felt like, I didn't know this about Georgia before or anything like that?
Well, I don't know if it's specifically about Georgia, but I didn't know that, you know, Eli Wolf had it in him. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I thought he was, again, a graduate transfer from Tennessee, a lot of SEC experience. From what we knew about him coming in, you know, he was pretty strong, you know, as a blocker. And again, just a guy that they needed for depth at the position with Luke Ford gone. And then obviously Isaac Nana leaving early for NFL. But seeing that game against Murray State, I think he's already doubled his career receiving yards in these two games, I believe. I think he's got 5 catches for 84 yards on the season. I think he had about 78 coming into the season. So for me, that's something I learned. Obviously, this first year under James Coley in this offense, we were interested to see what he was going to do. And the tight end position is one that we were really watching to see how they're going to implement that position, you know, if they were going to use it more. And I think it's pretty clear that, you know, Jake Fromm has a guy that he has a lot of trust in, you know, real early with Eli Wolf. He went to him often. And again, like I said, the production speaks for itself. I mean, he is Georgia's leading receiver now as we head into week 3. So that's something that I kind of took from this game and just 2 weeks into the season that, you know, Eli Wolf has a chance to be a major part of this offense and a guy that Jake Fromm might be depending on a lot on third down. Charlie Warner, again, it's a guy that they ask him to do a lot, you know, that he doesn't really show up in the stat sheet in Georgia's offense. You know, he has a lot on his shoulders, a lot of responsibility in this offense. And as far as just pure targets, he might not have what Eli's had so far. But I think it's pretty clear that both those guys are a key part of this, the key cogs in this offense. And again, that's just something that we were waiting to see. You don't know summer and fall camp really what the identity of this team is going to be and what roles guys are going to play. And I think early on, Eli's carved himself a pretty significant role in Georgia's offense.
You know, I don't want to get too technical with this. It looked to me like he had an option route that he was running from the slot that was kind of a square in or a post. And he was adjusting it based on what Murray State was giving him in terms of zone coverage. I'm interested to see, though, if Georgia's going to try to take advantage of potential mismatches like that more so in man coverage, because Jake Fromm said it after the game, said that was their way of kind of beating the zone. You've got beaters built into every route tree, every route combination. And I just wonder if that's going to be there. And, we've had a lot of discussion over at Dogs 247 today about why not Charlie Warner? Why has Eli Wolf jumped over Charlie Warner? Not at all. I mean, it's just one of those things where, listen, I firmly believe Kirby Smart when he says the coverage dictates where they go with the football. That's where Jake Fromm is a really good player, is because he can read the coverage and go there with the football. He doesn't touch the football with the idea that, hey, George Pickens is getting this ball or Eli Wolf is getting this ball. He's gonna survey it. He's gonna look at the coverage. He's gonna decide where to go with it. And I think that's why Wolf ended up with those balls. And it could be Charlie Warner next week. Could be John Fitzpatrick in a couple weeks. It could be somebody else. Could be DeAndre Swift catching eight balls. We just don't know. And it's gonna depend on how teams are electing to cover Georgia. Rusty, was there anything that you saw that maybe you learned about this team on Saturday?
I mean, I love that I guess pick there by Kip, because I wrote about a month ago that Eli Wolf is a guy that I heard some buzz about, and he was more athletic than even Georgia thought when they got down here. What a great decision by Kirby Smart. Look, Eli Wolf is taking a spot out of this recruiting class. Okay, let's be clear. He was that taking him takes a spot out of the 2020 class. But look at what he's doing, the potential there. What you saw yesterday and what he could be for this year. So absolutely it was worth it with the issues they had losing Isaac Nauta early and then Luke Ford transferring. So I love that by Kip. That's a very good point. I just think, and Jake, this is kind of, you know, you've talked about this guy, there's a lot of different opinions on him, but watching Monty Rice play now, he's not thinking anymore. He has turned loose. Now, yes, he did miss a tackle or two, but man, he is a hammer. When he hits you, he is physical. He's making plays. He's beating the guards on pulls. He's getting inside the tackles, you know, getting upfield, stuff like that. When he sees a play now, he's there. That tells me he is no longer hesitant. He is in firm command of what Glenn Schumann wants him to do. And listen, that inside linebacker room is stacked. But I'm telling you right now, I could not be more impressed with Monty Rice so far and where he is. And I think he is going to be a very, very good player for Georgia this year. His time has come.
Yeah, I thought he played really well on Saturday. And the tackles he missed were ones where he was kind of getting to the ball carrier, maybe in a pursuit mode where he was kind of there to support and was, you know, maybe got there a little quicker than most guys should have. But he's playing very fast right now. And as soon as N'Kobe Dean gets enough experience and Quay Walker gets enough experience to play fast like that, Georgia's just going to rotate them in and keep them coming and keep them fresh as teams are keeping running backs fresh. And that helps them cover them out of the backfield, helps them in pursuit. I tell you one thing I learned, and it was this. Kirby Smart's not quite as stubborn as I thought he was. And I say that because so Georgia completely changed what they've done. And I noticed it. I went back and watched it this morning. Just watched the defense one time through, especially in the first half when most of the starters were in there and they were running their stuff a lot. But they played a lot more aggressive against Murray State than they did against Samford, against Austin Peay, against Middle Tennessee State, some of these non-Power 5 programs, even SCS programs that run the spread. And that resulted in probably a couple bigger plays than they wanted to give up, but it also resulted in, I believe, 6 sacks and 11 tackles for a loss. And let's face it, an FCS team is not going to overcome that, and that they're just not going to do it. And you know, had it not been for one big play and one touchdown defensively, Georgia would have pitched another touchdownless game, basically. So it's one of those things where I kind of applaud Kirby and Dan Lanning and Glenn Schumann for deciding to be a little bit more aggressive there, because those three guys, I know all the coaches are involved in the game plan, but you got to think, based on how things were done at Alabama, that those three are probably in the room when the thing gets finalized. And I thought that was key, because, and I also think that the corners Georgia has now allows that, because, you know, Tyreek Stevenson and DJ Daniel and Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell are big guys. They can manhandle some of these receivers at the line of scrimmage. They can throw things off and allow the rush to get there. And I thought it was very interesting how, and Kirby came out and said it after the game, they changed how they played these spread teams. And listen, I know Kirby's not into this. No football coach ever will be. But ultimately, it made it a more entertaining brand of football. I mean, rather than giving up three here, five there, and stopping them on third down, they were putting them behind the chains and giving some fans something to cheer about and forcing intentional grounding penalties and had guys sharing sacks that shouldn't have been sharing sacks because one guy was making them, but the official scorer had them there. I'm sure Georgia's numbers are different when they watch the film than what comes out in the official stat sheet based on what I saw. But I thought that ultimately it resulted in a more entertaining brand of football, and it was also, I think, a good move and allowed Georgia to kind of taste a little blood there and feel it a little bit in terms of their ability to get after the quarterback and realize how big that can be for them and build some confidence in that area. All right, guys. There's no way we're going to get out of the show, and we've got one more topic after this, but there's no way we're going to get out of the show without talking about George Pickens. It's Murray State now, so you would expect George Pickens to be a better athlete than anybody Murray State puts on defense. But I thought, and I want y'all's take on this too, I thought George Pickens made some stuff look easy that was not easy at all. I'm not talking about the ability to beat coverage. I'm talking about, you know, getting thrown open on a curl and just plucking the ball out of the air like he's done it a billion times. Kept making a diving catch and just – I've never seen anybody make a diving catch quite like that. Usually they cradle it. He just snatched it, tugged it, rolled over on it, 43 yards. And then on the touchdown, I didn't know if he was going to be able to stay in bounds, and I think he got both feet in and may have got a third. So what do you guys think, and Kip, I'll kick it off with you here. What were your thoughts on George Pickens and kind of how he played on Saturday and how easy he made it look?
I think this is who we thought it was going to be. It's tough because these guys come in, especially the really highly rated prospects, and the expectations for these players is sky high. But you know, these are the types of players that Kirby Smart's winning these recruiting battles to have on the roster. I mean, these are the types of talents you want lining up, or rather than having the opponent have this guy. You know, think about, you know, Auburn in that game, the game they just had against Tulane. They could really use a guy like George Pickens on that roster right now with Seth Williams. When he went down to injury, they didn't have that kind of big play guy. So, you know, it has that kind of ripple effect. When Georgia beats out Auburn and flips a guy like George Pickens, they're able to reap the benefits, and then that's what we're seeing. And I think, you know, Kirby Smart mentioned, you know, the thing that impressed him was that downfield block that he threw in that D'Andre Swift run, and that's the really encouraging thing, you know, because those are the types of plays that you want these receivers to buy in on. So whenever, you know, that safety creeps down to try to stop that run and they run a play action, or, you know, they try to stretch the ball down the field, Pickens can kind of be rewarded for his hard work and be able to make the types of plays that he made in that game. So, you know, for me, yeah, it's definitely – you got to think that's encouraging if you're a Georgia fan, but it just kind of solidifies what we saw in him coming out of high school. I know that, you know, he's a hardworking player, very physical, takes a lot of pride in what he does, and he's very passionate about, you know, mastering his craft. And I think you kind of saw a little bit of that on the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that he drew as well. But that's just kind of what comes with what you're getting in George Pickens. And, you know, so far in two games that – probably won't be talking about a lot at the end of the season. You know, he's looked like that guy and the guy that Georgia's kind of lacked in the last couple of years as a potential, that number one true alpha receiver. He's definitely kind of shown the part early on, and we got to see what he's able to do when the lights are on in meaningful football games where Georgia's needing a big play to actually win the game. You know, if he's ready for that stage yet, that's kind of the big question mark now. But, you know, as far as doing the little things, he's showing progress in that area in between the big plays, and that's definitely encouraging.
It was it took about as long as a Matthew Bowling 100-meter dash for Kip to send me a message right after that D'Andre Swift run that George Pickens had earned some more carry, had earned some touches with that block. And then bam, I mean, there were what was it, two? Well, he caught the curl first, and there was two on one drive, caught another later in the game, led George in receiving for the game. So yeah, that block definitely played into it real real big. And you know, Rusty, I know that you've been high on him, and we all saw the catch, the catch in the first preseason scrimmage. But what are your thoughts on it? And can we really take anything away from it happening against Murray State? I mean, is this a sign of things to come, or is it just George Pickens doing what he's supposed to do against an FCS team?
And this guy's an elite wide receiver. I mean, we saw it in high school. You know, that's a fun part of our job. And, Jake, you know, you were in recruiting at one time, but me and Kip see these guys at these camps, and we kind of get that first glimpse, and then we see him at, you know, the Nike camp. I watched him play multiple 7-on-7s because he was playing with Jaden Hazelwood at the time, who was committed to Georgia. He was committed to Auburn at the time. And this guy, this is what he does. I mean, this is why there was such a big deal. This is why he was so heavily recruited. You know, he's a five-star for a reason. That was not a flash in the pan type deal. This guy is going to do this. He's going to make big plays. The block he made on the touchdown yesterday, that's a product of Georgia and Coach Hankton and those guys saying, you know, if you're going to be on the field, you're going to block. You know, and I say this all the time, if you're going to play in the NFL, you're going to block at wide receiver. So, you know, I think Georgia fans just got their first glimpse of what all three of us have known for a while. This guy is an elite player. Jake, I agree with your comment there. He made those things look easy. Those were a hell of a catch. I mean, that's ball skills. That's large hands. You know, I think people take it for granted. That crossing route on the touchdown, he's in full extension with both arms and has the athletic ability to get both feet down. That's not easy to do. That's something they're trained to do, but that's not easy to do. Big man like that, just huge. And then showing the ability to lay out for a pass that Jake Fromm put over his shoulder. I mean, this is just things to come. This is signs of things to come. You see those flashes as freshmen, you know, but this guy is elite. He is going to be a very, very good player for Georgia, and it's not going to be down the line. He's going to be a very, very good player for Georgia sooner than later, and he's going to be a big piece of the puzzle this year. You know, Jake Fromm's really a guy that likes to – I wouldn't say he does favorites, but we all know what he did with Javon Williams 2 years ago. He'll find a guy that he gets comfortable with, and Eli Wolf is a guy that I think he's starting to build something with as well. But he's already had some targets to Pickens, and it's only going to be more. I mean, Jake Fromm is that type of quarterback. He gets comfortable with you. He knows you can make a play. He's going to give you the ball.
Yeah, and I found it interesting when we were talking with Fromm after the game. You know, he was talking about kind of running the offense. Somebody asked him kind of a general question about running the offense, and you know, he's kind of going through a typical play, nothing specific, but he's like, one of the first things he brings up is making sure George knows what to do, and that's kind of the way he said it. Now it kind of caught me off guard, and I'm like, all right, well, you know, are you really thinking pre-play like, hey, I need to make sure George knows what to do because we're probably going to need him to make a play? That's kind of what I read into that. And so I really think that you're right on that, and I think this is a sign of things to come too. I was most impressed, by the way, on that 43-yard catch. He just blew by that defensive back. Now, he's supposed to do that against guys like, you know, teams like Murray State. They're going to be better cornerbacks on Georgia's schedule. But showing the speed and the burst that – sometimes, man, it's not about what it says at top end. It's how quickly you can get there, or whether you can kind of turn it on in an instant and make up that much ground that quickly. And Pickens has that. He can get up speed really quickly for a 6'3" guy. Reminds me of Fred Gibson a little bit in that regard. Fred wasn't a burner either, but he could kind of do the same things. And Fred was also an athlete that could make things look easy. I think Pickens has a little bit more physicality to him, and I think ultimately he's got a higher ceiling. But it kind of reminds you of some of the things that he did in a Georgia uniform there with Gibson, and you know, the frames are similar. But I think Pickens has got the ability to get a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger. But I expect another big player too from him against Arkansas State. I expect him to make some big catches against Notre Dame, and going forward, it's going to be a little surprising to me if he's not Georgia's, you know, number one receiver by the end of the year. Maybe not in stats, but the guy that they're going to in big situations and seeing a lot of snaps, just because when your coach tells you, says after the game and wants to tell everybody that you're developing into a complete player, you're doing a lot right. And because coaches don't want to say that. They want to critique you. They want to pick you apart. And when Kirby kind of comes out and says George is turning the corner, basically, that he's becoming a complete player, that those are the type of things you want to see.
One thing I did notice after he scored a touchdown and he came to the sideline, watch how many upperclassmen came over to him and congratulated him. That tells me two things. They respect him, and number two, they know they're going to need him. When you watch Ben Cleveland walk up to him and put his arm around him and say a few words, you watch DeAndre Swift come over to him and say a few words, they know they need that guy, and that tells me he's working in practice and he has their respect. So little things like that I try to pick up on, and I definitely saw that yesterday after he scored, came back to the sideline, a lot of upperclassmen came up to him.
And it's also usually a sign, Rusty, that the kid's probably been ridden pretty hard at some one point or the other by a coach, by a fellow receiver or something, that he's caught an earful and everybody's heard about it. And they're glad to see him break through and make a play like that and kind of say, hey, this is what happens when you listen, when you completely buy in. And that's something that a moment that all freshmen need. Before we close this thing out, and we got to talk about it, what in the hell is going on in Knoxville? I tell you what, man, like, listen, you're not going to find a more, and I'm just going to be honest about this, you're not going to find a more friendly podcast, especially for a Georgia rival, to what's going on there. Because, listen, I got to know Jeremy Pruitt a little bit when he was at Georgia. I got to know Kevin Scherer a little bit when he was at Georgia, and Tracy Rocker. And I've known some of those guys for a little while. And I tell you what, man, I'm as surprised as anybody, because I said on this very show that I thought Tennessee was going to be better. I thought Tennessee was going to improve. I thought year two was going to be an improvement for them. And I tell you what, man, two non-conference losses to start the season, it wouldn't have shocked me if either one of these games were close, but to lose them both, to let one of them just kind of just absolutely slip away from you, like BYU on Saturday night, I don't get it. I can't wrap my head around it.
Jake, I'm going to tell you this, and I'm not by any means saying I'm predicting a win, but they play Chattanooga this week, and Chattanooga's a better team than Georgia State. I'm just telling you they are, and they have got to. They can't look ahead to Florida. They can't do anything right now but other than this game. And I tell you, I'm shocked. I really am shocked. You can say what you want. You don't have to like Tennessee. You don't have to like Jeremy Pruitt. But deep down, if you're a true football fan, they got a pretty damn good coaching staff, and for whatever reason, it's not working right now. And, you know, I don't know, they just don't know how to win. And that's not an easy thing to fix. I mean, it's almost like they sit around and go, okay, what's bad about to happen? Instead of, I need to make this play, they're thinking what bad's about to happen. And that's a bad deal that's what I got last night watching them. And I actually watched a little bit of that replay today. Like, they're sitting around waiting. That busted coverage on that long ball, and I have no idea what that guy was thinking. And then he had a missed tackle. Nigel Warrior misses the tackle right there. I mean, those are two huge no-nos. You cannot happen at that point in the game. So I don't know what's going on, man, but I'm telling you that it is not an easy fix. And I'm telling you right now, Chattanooga is not a damn bad team at all.
Kip, I was getting ready to drive through a Georgia State Patrol checkpoint on the way home from the game last night, and I passed. I didn't have to go to jail, everybody. I wasn't partaking in the spirits in the press box, so no worries. But Kip was the one that broke the news to me that Tennessee lost, and I almost drove off the road. It blew me away. I couldn't believe, because I'd seen what was going on earlier in the game, and it just really shocked me. You know, you had a chance to watch some of that game. I mean, what's your take, man?
Two things kind of stood out to me from that game. And again, I told you guys last week, and just like Rusty's saying, you know, that Chattanooga is better than Georgia State. You know, I said BYU, you know, they're a little better than Georgia State too. I think Tennessee played them a little better. They kind of realized, you know, they got some humble pie in week one and they needed to work on some things. But I knew this BYU game was going to be trouble. And really, the one thing that kind of stood out for me, I don't want to say on the coaching side, but just the way the game went, you know, Tennessee had four fourth downs that they had to make decisions on. And the first one was right there on the 5-yard line. It was like 4th and 3. You know, instead of kicking a field goal, Pruitt rolled the dice. And, you know, they got lucky on that one. Jared Garantano, he had a pass that he was throwing to Dominic Wood Anderson. They're tight end in the back of the end zone. He didn't even see the BYU linebacker. And the guy batted the pass, and it ended up landing in Juwan Jennings' hands for a touchdown. They got lucky on that one. You know, the next time they had a 4th and 1 on BYU's 19-yard line in the second quarter, and they lined up big. They went jumbo. They handed it to Eric Gray, which I think he's maybe 5'10", 190, and he got stuffed for no gain. And that really, I mean, that showed me something. They lined up man-on-man against BYU and could not get it done. And then they had another 4th and 1. I think it was, again, in the second quarter. They were on BYU's 22-yard line. This time, Pruitt went for the field goal. So they gave them, I think, it was 13-3, halftime lead. And fourth down. So now you know, you had a chance to, I think it was 4th and 1 at BYU's 30-yard line. And, you know, if they kick a field goal here, it would have forced BYU to score a touchdown to win a game. So, you know, and a touchdown would have probably cemented it. So Pruitt went for it, and, you know, they didn't get it. I think it was an end around. And the left tackle and left guard both got beat at the line of scrimmage. So you had two defenders that just blew up the play, and the linebacker stopped them short of the first down marker. And so those are the big plays that stood out to me. You know, those fourth down decisions that really kind of swung the momentum of the game. And then I talked earlier about the one touchdown that Jared threw in the game was a mistake. And so it kind of stood out to me that during the course of the game, he had a lot of checkdowns, a lot of decision-making problems, and really just was not in a rhythm. And he's a junior. You know, they've had time to kind of see who he is, and it's got to be really concerning for them that, you know, he hasn't progressed more. So I think with Chattanooga coming up, you got to start thinking about those other quarterbacks you have on the roster. And maybe whether what you have in JT Shrout or what do you have in Brian Maher, I think they're freshmen or redshirt freshmen. You might need to start taking a look at what those guys bring to the table right now because, you know, as it stands, they're just not getting it done offensively at all. And it's just not cohesive right now. And, you know, the offensive line play hasn't been very impressive and the decision making at quarterback hasn't been impressive either.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, it's baffling to me. It really is, and it's not a talent issue. I'm not saying Tennessee's got the talent to win the SEC East or anything like that. They got the talent to beat Georgia State and BYU. There are some good players on their roster. There's some good experienced players on their roster. I mean, hell, if nothing else, Tennessee's got two or three players that you can kind of – you should be able to rely upon to take over a game like that and win it for you. And kind of come out on top, and I don't know what's going on there. I really don't. Rusty, I know you got one thing to throw at us before we end this thing.
And listen, let's just go a minute apiece on this, but this is something that I don't think is good for the game, and that we don't ever talk about other things outside of college football, but just to me, a kind of concerning with Antonio Brown, how that went down, and now he's with the Patriots. Kind of want to, Jake, give me a minute. Yep, give me a minute. What's your thoughts on how all that went down? And I think it's just typical BS, man, that how he played the Raiders, and now he's on, you know, you give the Patriots this weapon. Kind of want your thoughts on it.
You know, it's positive reinforcement all around for him, and that's what's discouraging for me. It's discouraging for me. It's like, you know, he completely blew his way right out of Pittsburgh,
sure,
a well-run organization, and by all accounts, and gets rewarded with $30 million guaranteed in Oakland, and then blows his way right out of Oakland, and now he gets to go play for New England. Now, I know Bill Belichick doesn't really care about the health of the game or the health of the NFL or whatever. He wants to win, and that's part of what makes him what he is. But it's pretty discouraging as a football fan, and I'm a big AB fan. I always have been. He's a hard worker. He's fun to watch, but I agree with you. It's definitely not good for the game.
Kip.
real risky move. I mean, I know he rolled in there with the Raiders, and you know, he had been catching passes from Ben Roethlisberger his entire career, and you know, he had a summer with Derek Carr, and I guess he thought, you know, I'm not going to get my numbers, and so he was willing to take that guaranteed money he had and just flush it down, and now he's rolling the dice, and obviously now getting to play with the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. On paper, sounds great, but we're still talking about what? I mean, millions and millions of dollars that he won't get that back. I mean, he was going to make that this year, and now he won't. And he's rolling the dice on this 1 year deal. You know, I think it's what, up to $15 million. That, you know, he's lost double digit million dollars on this deal. It's a huge gamble on himself, and I'm not sure. I mean, we've seen it not work out with the Patriots. Everyone points to, you know, Randy Moss and how they were able to really get the best out of him. But, you know, there are a lot of receivers to go in New England, and they just can't buy into Belichick's program, you know. And if you don't buy in, you're out. And I've seen that happen multiple times before. You know, they're the one organization that can roll the dice in these guys just because they're going to be fine either way. But I think it's very risky in his part, but overall, it's definitely just not a good look, you know, for the game of football, Aaron. I think, you know, I'm all about it being a players' league, and you know, I love that about the NBA. It's entertaining, the fact that these guys can make a lot of moves and make organizations get them to where they want to be. But I still don't like the precedent that Antonio Brown did. He basically just, you know, played the Raiders into his hands and made them do what he wanted to do right before the season. It's just an overall bad look. But, you know, I, as a Falcons fan, you know, I can't say that I'm a huge fan of how it ended up, but it seems like I have much bigger problems on my hands after watching that first game for Atlanta.
I'll touch it. My only concern is these young high school athletes to see how Antonio Brown's acting, how they probably perceive he got his way. They don't get into the financials like Kip just talked about. We understand that as men, but there's a lot of kids that's going to see how he behaved and think, you know what, if I'm somewhere I don't want to be, then I can quit on them and somebody else will pick me up. So I just think about long term and all that kind of stuff. So I just really think it was a bad deal the whole way around for Antonio Brown and the good of the game.
Hit a nail on the head there. I mean, ultimately, big picture, that's got to be one of the biggest concerns right there, is how this trickles down to the guys who look up to him. That's all the time we've got for today, folks. This has been a good one. This has been a fun one. We're gonna have to cover media day tomorrow at Georgia, Arkansas State. We're a little under 2 weeks away from Georgia Notre Dame, 8 p.m. kickoff. It's going to be electric. We're really excited about it, and you know, it seems like Georgia's got it going, and this is going to be a pretty fun season. So we'll have it all covered for you. But for this episode, I'm Jake Rowe, Dogs 24/7. They're Kip Adams and Rusty Mansell, also of Dogs 24/7, and this has been the Junkyard Dogcast. Take care.